So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this the Weekend Wrestling Indies International. I'm Pete and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, what's going on, man?
Same old, same old. Beautiful weekend. Just last weekend, went to PWG Bola.
Yeah, how was it?
Biggest news coming out of it is that Puma King exists. Everyone knows this now. Because I guess no one had ever heard of him. I think we've reviewed one of his matches on the show before. I think the Powerbomb title tournament, we reviewed one of his matches. So, you know, I guess if you're going to attack pundits for not knowing who Puma King is, we're not on that list, right?
Exactly.
But yeah, I thought it was pretty fun because there was a guy sitting next to me, and I'm not gonna dox him or anything or say who it is, but he was someone who does host a wrestling podcast who, when Puma King was coming out, he goes, "I saw Puma King last week in PCW, and oh my God, this guy is amazing." And then he spent the rest of the time talking to me as if I didn't know who Puma King was. even though when he said that to me, I said, "Yeah, I know, he's great." And he just kept going, and he was just so excited. But, you know, I can't blame the guy. He was just excited to talk about a wrestler that he just heard about and how good he was.
Yeah, you know, and which is hard nowadays, you know. It's hard to – those secrets don't last long. Marco Stunt was a secret for all of a week, exactly. You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, we had seen Marco, and I actually even openly tweeted out to Cecil Scott, like, I didn't necessarily like Marco the first time we saw him. Because the first time we saw him, he was just in a – scramble match,
yeah,
and he was just some guy, and to me I was
and I wasn't even calling him by the right name.
This kid, whatever. And then he turns around and I saw him a couple more times after that, still before he kind of broke out, and he won me over, and I was like, oh, okay, now I'm starting to like him. And then out of nowhere he's huge. I mean, I would say out of the debuts, him, Puma King, they got over huge over the weekend. Bandido is obviously basically the biggest star in the Globe Theater. And I, you know, I said it, and then I saw it got tweeted out by Jamesy, who's a good friend, giving me credit for saying that Bandido is the first star of the Globe Theater era of PWG. Because he showed up there at the show. He's gotten over the biggest there. Everyone in that crowd loves him. Everyone in that building loves him. He works well in that building because it's bigger, I think.
Did the All In rub help him?
I think PWG, he was already the guy, honestly. Okay. I think All In was nothing. And I even said, I felt like All In didn't give him the shine that I was hoping it would. Just cause he didn't really get to stand out cause the match was so rushed. Yeah. I was expecting him to get over bigger like he does at PWG. So I think PWG crowd was already into him. He was a lot of people's pick to win it. My prediction was him or Jeff Cobb from the beginning. With Jeff Cobb being to me a make good, I thought that Jeff Cobb, or not a make good, but a kind of a last minute replacement for Matt Riddle. I felt like Riddle was going to win. He's out. And then Cobb was kind of slid into his place. And that's exactly what happened. I only went to the first and second night, and I actually left the first night at intermission. So I didn't see the last three matches, which was a bummer for sure. Cause it sounded like they were all very good, with PCO attempting to kill himself and everything. But for my money, out of all the first round matches, the first two nights, everything I saw, best match was Darby Allin versus Jeff Cobb. And I was not the only one saying that. And a lot of people, not just people who agreed that Darby Allin is very good were saying that, but people who were coming into that match expecting it to not do very well thought that it was amazing. So just a really great showing from both guys. Darby Allin has really developed, I think. Not to say that he wasn't talented, but he's developed in actually showing off what works. Selling super well, bumping huge for Jeff. Jeff looked really good throwing him around. And then in the end, it made sense. That match was all about shining Jeff to make him look as good as possible coming out of the first round as he eventually goes on to win the thing. So it made sense. But yeah, good show. I got sick. I don't know if I got sick at PWG or at my niece's birthday party. So as of right now. And then also everyone at my work was sick when I came back to work. So I guess maybe I even got it before PWG weekend. Possibly. So yeah, I just... I'm sick again. It seems to be every time I go to PWG, but this time it may not be PWG's fault.
Okay. And then we've heard, like, the Lucha Brothers, Gordon Meltzer, now they did not sign with WWE because of their Lucha Underground contract, so they're going to be working indies now again. So I would like to see him in the WWE, but you know what? I mean, as long as we, you know, and so we don't. They're gobbling up a lot of talent on the indies. So, I mean, I honestly thought the Penta and Phoenix might go in with Ray as a group, so Ray wouldn't have to work so much on his own type of thing. Maybe do some a lot of six-mans. But obviously that's not the case, and they're going to I'll be doing the indies, still doing the indie grind. How do you feel about that, man?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of kind of rumors going around. I mean, I just talked about Jeff Cobb winning. There was the people talking about Jeff Cobb's not going to win Bola because he's an ROH bound at the first of the year. PWG doesn't know if they can get dates on him, and then he wins. And he's instantly booked for his title match, so maybe he's gone. Like I said, I had heard rumors Lucha Brothers were not making it out for Bola this year already. They were going to not be coming back to PWG, and then they came in for the last night, and as I said, it felt like a farewell. I did not see the match, so I don't know if it really felt like a farewell in the building, but I heard people saying that. I have heard people tell me that it did feel like a farewell. So, you know, I mean, would be good WWE. I don't know if they need WWE that much, and that's the interesting thing with them, is I think that they could probably make more money in WWE than they can outside of it, for sure. But at the same time, I think that they're probably doing pretty well for themselves, and they're able to have really great matches all over the place. So I don't necessarily know. It's one of the rare cases where I think they would actually be a bigger plus for WWE than it really is for them to go, like, than it is for them to be going there. Especially because the money that they can still make in Mexico is probably pretty good. So, you know, they're not hurting to go to WWE like some people, like a lot of indie wrestlers are. But that said, I mean, yeah, they would have been a great fit. And going in with Ray, I think you could put those guys right on TV. And that's the next question with so many companies getting higher visibility. You've got Lucha Underground, which is very clearly a big-time TV product. When does WWE start saying which guys don't have to go to developmental because they already have the TV experience? Similar to, you know, with the WCW-WWF kind of switchovers that they used to have, where those guys had already worked TV so much that you didn't need to worry about getting them ready to know how to work on TV. You know, which guys do you pick? AJ Styles, obviously, he got put straight onto TV, but other guys who have been in TNA for years, Samoa Joe, you know, he did have to go to developmental. So what's the thing? Are Lucha Brothers with their Lucha Underground experience, would they be enough to go straight on TV? It wasn't enough for Ricochet, and Ricochet had a big run in New Japan also, which is also, you know, technically on TV in Japan. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they would send them to developmental, because it would seem like a major waste to me and guys who don't need to be in developmental at all. So
the only thing I think they would do is so they'd maybe learn the WWE style a little bit before they got called up to the roster.
Yeah,
I think that's what a lot of it is. People always say it's for the TV thing, and that's part of it, but I think there's a certain style. I think they would want to see them. I want to see them learn the style a little bit more.
Yeah, it's more of just like a quick pit stop to prove that you can do it. I think probably for guys like them would make sense. I could see that. That's, again, it's interesting though with AJ Styles. Why didn't he have to, you know, go to the developmental at all? And then it's,
I think, because he was considered a huge star outside of WWE.
Right,
and he was on TNA for how many years, and then New Japan. Right. I think that was the main reason.
Could have been a WCW thing. I mean, AJ Styles was on WCW, so
that too. And maybe Vince thought he was ready. Maybe Vince was proponent. We don't know. I mean, everyone thought Vince hated him, but I mean, he's been his champion for a while.
Yeah.
On the SmackDown brand, and he's been carrying that SmackDown. So maybe he's been. Maybe he was something that Vince was keen on right off the bat, and then all the smarks are wrong about Vince not really liking AJ.
Wrong about
there.
Vince in general. I mean, so many people, especially some people who maybe dropped some takes just recently that were a little bit out of left field about luchadors, has also like kind of attacked Vince McMahon quite a bit about not being very good at promoting, and not a very good, you know, booker or whatever, or eye for talent, all this stuff. But I mean, if he was able to see AJ is a guy that should just automatically be on TV, I mean, I got to give him some credit for that, right?
And then who did they pair AJ up with immediately? They paired up with Chris Jericho, who had been with the company for how many fucking years?
Right.
So, I mean, that was another thing. Oh, AJ does, Chris Jericho can't work AJ's style. But it wasn't about that. It was about, I think Chris kind of, I don't think they wanted AJ to fall into the same potholes that Chris Jericho did when he first entered the company.
Right.
And I think that's kind of why he was paired with Chris Jericho off the bat.
No, and that makes sense.
And then it's come out that, I guess, WWE owns the Progress Library. So, I mean, they've been sitting on that. And I personally don't care anymore at this point.
Yeah, we haven't reviewed a Progress show in how long, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I dropped the service because, I'm just not interested in the product anymore. And it almost feels watered down. And then hearing that pretty much Smallman has been co-opted in a way. Where he's, they think he's come. The Observer was saying there speculation that he'll be doing a lot of the behind the scenes work for the WWE UK and NXT UK brand. So, I mean, how thin is that going to make Smallman run? You know,
right? I mean, yeah,
and what is going to be his priorities?
Good on him, I guess. Do they just fold Progress into NXT or the WWE NXT thing at this point? I mean. It almost seems like it makes sense. They closed their school, so it's not like they even have their own school anymore. They don't really have much except for running the shows. And
yeah, WWE's going to have assets to their top stars. So, yeah.
So it almost seems superfluous to run both shows if Smallman and company are already just going to get jobs in the NXT UK. I mean, it seems
like... Yeah, I mean, it almost sounds like how it was in the 80s when WWE and Paul Bosch were working together, where Paul Bosch... would take a percentage of the gate, but do the promoting for the town, and eventually Vince got fed up with that deal, and they forced a power play. And the history, if you listen to different people, there's totally different views of history on what really happened. I don't want to go into a long tirade about it, but you can always hear my take on it about Houston wrestling, because Bruce Pritchard has put his take on it and spin on it, and there's a lot of fallacies in what he says. We've seen it with Larry Mastic was the old announcer for St. Louis Wrestling, and it was similar to the deal with him, where he was promoting the St. Louis town for him originally, but then again, they felt there was more money on the table for the WWE to do it themselves, so they power brokered him out of there. So, I mean, they have a history of this, and I mean, yeah, maybe not. Maybe they'll keep Smallman, but I mean, this kind of feels almost identical to the starting, the building blocks of how that happened in the territories, and with those two in particular, Larry Matisic and Paul Bosch. I mean, it's the writing's on the wall. I mean, we've all speculated that the guys, I mean, you can either go, you're either with me or against me, and either way, I'm going to fucking run you over. But if you're with me, I might keep it around a little longer and use you. But if you're against me, I'm going to fucking steamroll you, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of where they're at, basically. And we've made this comparison in this conversation before with Progress, and it was around the time that Smallman was trying to argue that, oh, this is actually good for the indies. The WWE are our buddies. And then here it comes. I mean, we'll see what happens. Maybe they're right. Maybe WWE is just totally different now.
I don't believe it.
Yeah, me neither.
Because, I mean, we've seen it on WrestleMania weekend when they want a talent from Evolve. They end up on their NXT programming, and Evolve's got to rebook it on the fly. Yep. So, they're not that friendly, but hey, what else is out there? Anything else interesting? I'd say I just started reading the Tim Hornbaker book about the death of the territories, and really good read so far. I mean, yeah, it's pretty heavy, and it's written like a textbook, but it's if you're into the history of wrestling, it's a good book to read. And once I finish it up, I'll do a full breakdown on it. Anything you want to hit on, Tim?
Nothing too much, really. I mean, that's about the big hits, I guess, right now.
Yeah, no, what do you have on your agenda for wrestling, live wrestling events coming up in September and October?
Geez, as of right now, nothing. I just had Bola. We've got another PWG show coming up in October, Smokey and the Bandito, which is a really good card that's got Hechicero on it, which is interesting, against Zack Sabre Jr., which is
that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, so that sounds like a good match to check out live. Otherwise, I'm thinking about next year. I'm starting to make my plan for SCI for sure.
There you go.
Otherwise, not much. I mean, 3-2-1 battle. I would love to go to one of those shows, but they just had some big matches recently with Dan Makabe and rematch with Timothy Thatcher. That's like really everyone should check out, obviously. And then they're doing a big like Battle of the Sexes card that has him again against Shotzi Blackheart, which is an interesting matchup for me because just babyface versus heel dynamic between those two could be really good. So yeah, I mean, locally there's some,
McAfee, he's becoming an internet darling right now, isn't he?
No, oh, shit. I cut out there. I think you were saying he's an internet darling, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, he really is.
Getting a lot of positive buzz lately. From what I've seen with the guy's damn good.
Yeah, he's really good, super talented. He's starting to get, you know, people are starting to pay attention to him somewhat in the right circles. Segunda Kaeda is all over him, which is a group who I don't necessarily always agree with 100%, but I think when me and Segunda Kaeda agree on something, then I think that you can pretty much expect that it's very good. Like, there's very few things that we cross over on that aren't like actually just excellent stuff. So yeah, I would say a guy that should be getting checked out. There's a Black Craft or Black Label, no, Black Craft or whatever. They make clothes. They sponsored or made clothes for Baron Corbin, especially when he was at NXT. It's got like the wolves and all that stuff. They're starting a wrestling company, I guess, that's running its first show in Anaheim in like 2 or 3 weeks. I just found out about this because they just announced the card and it's just getting posted up online. And they've got like Jimmy Havoc coming out for a death match with someone. They're like, they got Soraya Knight as one of the champions. They're like bringing in some heavy hitters for fly-ins and stuff because it's a, you know, a kind of a money mark clothing company running a wrestling promotion. So we'll see what happens with that. I'm thinking about it. Unfortunately, it's on like a fucking Friday, and a drive to Anaheim after work on a Friday for me from Los Angeles is kind of rough. So I'm going to see if I can finagle maybe getting the day off or if I'll be able to make it out. But that's kind of an interesting thing coming up here in a week or two. And then the other thing is there's a couple of new promotions running in San Diego that I'm thinking about making a trip out down there. One of them, which is being run by B-Boy, I think it's called Ground Zero, and he's been running some decent cards with just locals and San Diego guys and LA guys and stuff, and just normal stuff, nothing over the top crazy, you know, match of the year level stuff, but just having a good solid wrestling show with locals from out here. And then the other one is Fist Combat, which is being run by that dirty Ron McDonald. He just recently did some jobber duty on WWE TV. I couldn't say exactly when. But it's like a hybrid comedy, but they also have some like interesting wrestlers making it out for those shows that don't make it out for other shows out here in the area. So thinking about maybe heading out there to check that out as well.
All right, cool. Yeah, I have on the agenda. I have tickets to the AAW show in Austin on the 12th, I believe it is, and then I'm flying out in October for the Action show at the end of October. So I'm super excited about both shows. Curious on who all they're bringing in. So far, the AAW show, I mean, they have Callahan booked. I'm not a big Callahan guy. I'm still wondering why AAW is coming to Austin, because it just seems weird since they're, you know, based in Chicago. But, I mean, I either it's like an ACH, I think, idea, or maybe a Callahan saying, hey, look what we did with Wrestle Circus out here, what we can get people in the building. But I don't know. This is all speculation. Have you heard anything?
No, I haven't heard any real stuff behind it. But, I mean, to me, it's ACH is one of their biggest stars right now. And then you've got the besties, or especially Davey Vega, who's been coming out to Texas for so long that I assume that there's probably that connection. Where
they're hell, Fitch, he cut his teeth. Which is kind of funny that we had at the SEI, they had Gary J., was one of the guys we had questions. So I was firing up questions about how back in the day it was, you know, Gary J and Davey Vega and a couple other guys on the Submission Squad and Matt Fitchett in his rookie year would drive up in this shit fucking shitty ass van from St. Louis to Texas. Yeah, Fitchett cut his teeth in Texas that a lot of people don't know about.
Yeah, he used to come out there more, and then he's kind of slowed down on his traveling. But he's actually, seemingly, I think, talked about wanting to step it up. And, I mean, they did just do that tour of England, the Besties did, which actually produced a couple good matches, but didn't get much buzz, unfortunately. So I don't know if they'll be heading back.
Yeah, I'm excited to do their work. They're working extra talented, so I'm looking forward to that, man. I think though they're the two most underrated good tag teams in wrestling right now.
Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah, for my money, there's probably the two most bang for your buck kind of tag teams.
Yeah.
To steal a phrase from another kind of overly, I guess, overly hyped tag team. Not to say that the Young Bucks are bad, but everyone perennially every year the Young Bucks are the best tag team in the world, and it's just, I don't know. That just seems so far-fetched to me to say that. There's so many good teams.
There is, and it's just like, it's like rinse, repeat. They're not just like, I have a major problem in the fact that they don't. I mean, technically, they're not even a real. They don't even follow the tag team rules. It almost becomes a. They try to follow the rules for a little bit, but when push comes to shove, Daniels usually their final. Whenever they're booked in a 25-minute match, those final 10 minutes, it becomes Lucha rules pretty much. I call it the Young Bucks rules, which is now spread out and become a disease on the indie scene with a lot of people, not just the Young Bucks, where it's become a lot of teams. This is tag team wrestling in 2018.
Right.
So I have a massive issue with that because that's not tag wrestling. That's just a free for all.
Yeah, but hell, the most money drawn, right? I mean, if you're going to talk about a team that's probably drawing the most money, the Young Bucks are probably in that conversation with the All-In thing going on and all that. So it's hard to argue, but I agree with you that for me, it's like it's weird to say people act like there's no question that they're just the best tag team in the world, and it's people who wouldn't necessarily make that money argument. You know, that wouldn't be their case for it.
Yeah, I think you make arguments. I mean, I think you make Undisputed Era. I think are up there. I think Penta and Phoenix are a great tag team. I think that Besties in the World. I think Extra Talented.
Aussie Open up there. Just for in ring action. Aussie Open are, I think, in the conversation.
There you go.
You know, yeah. There's a lot of teams that are in the conversation. You know.
Yeah, I don't think this is, but I'm sure they're gonna win. I mean, they're gonna win Observer Tag Team of the Year again. I mean, it's just like. But yeah, but it's at this point it's almost propaganda, and you're either Team Young Bucks or you're not Team Young Bucks almost, and I think I'm a middle guy where I think live they're a real fun act, but fuck, if you watch enough of it, they become pretty fucking, for a team that claims not to be formula, they're about as formula as it gets, honestly.
Yeah.
They might not just be the only difference is their high spots, but you just know they're going to this formula. But oh well. MLW, let's go into this. MLW Fusion episode 22 was War Games, and you know what? I mean, this is we'll get to it all, but pretty much we got promos from the heels, which I liked. We got babyface promos, which I thought was fucking terrible, especially for Dreamer. I thought this it was brutal. Then we had some recapping of stuff. Teddy Hart, PCO promo, which was kind of weird, off the wall. Teddy Hart promo. What do you think about all these promos before the War Games?
I mean, nothing stood out in a positive way, and the only thing that really stands out was Dreamer talking about Martin Luther King or whatever the fuck. I mean, that
I know he's trying to go somewhere, but it was just fucking terrible.
It was not necessary. I did make the argument because I was having the conversation because Brock showed it to me. It was like, oh, is that the show with this promo? And I was like, oh, Jesus. Like, we've got multiple wrestlers right now who are selling merchandise with Nazi images on it on pro wrestling tees.
Yeah.
So I'm like, having someone who's cutting a promo saying that Martin Luther King Jr. is good is actually the least of our fucking worries right now when it comes to this stuff. So I get where he's coming from, but yeah, some things should just be off limits for wrestling promos. And then the other thing that stood out that was very bad is the Brian Pillman Jr. thing. I mean, It was one thing sitting on the patio by his pool in the robe with the glass of wine, but in the backstage interview, that's really fucking bad. I thought that that's so tacky. Like, honestly, that they have the glasses of wine in the backstage there like that. I talked about it already, but the exploitation that that kind of has to do with the fucking history of his father and his family and everything, and that he's doing... I mean, I understand that he thinks it's fine, but I... Or maybe he doesn't think it's fine, but he's physically doing it, so that could be your argument that he's okay with it because he's doing it, but I think it's just really wrong.
He's taking a paycheck to do it, so...
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of hard. I mean, I know it's not Me Too or anything, but people talk about power dynamics all the time, right? It's pretty hard to tell the boss no when he wants you to do something that's like that, and I just... It feels super sketchy and super disrespectful and honestly just not necessary.
Yeah, that all the promos were just... The only thing I enjoyed on the promo side really was the from the heels. I thought that was good, basic promo stuff. But, yeah, everything else, I was like, God, this is just terrible. Yeah, the Dreamer thing was just... Not only was it bad, it was just clunky, and he was just trying to connect dots that weren't connecting. It was... Yeah, it was just brutal. Coming from that, he had this great promo a couple weeks ago, a really strong one. Then we get to the War Games. Okay, yeah, two rings, check. Cage, check. Okay, no roof. Okay, I can live with it. But I mean, that's still not War Games. Then we got to see we have tables, we have gimmicks in there, and it dawned on me this is War Games in the ECW arena, pretty much. It's like, you know, NXT did it differently, too. Why try to change something or fix something that's not broken? It always worked. And why do you need to change it up? Do you know why they need to change it up?
I mean, I obviously don't know why. Because they... just terrible.
And I don't get it.
And it's just, the cage and the setup, it reminded me, like you're saying, it's almost War Games. It reminded me of the ROH Cage of Death, which is like,
yeah,
that's ROH aping CZW. That's like really low rent. I mean, especially that's early ROH, you know, like that was low rent style compared to this, where it's just like, this should be MLW. They should be able to get the real, like something that looks legit. The fucking cage looked like it was buried taller than the ring announcer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, presentation, I already had an issue with it. And it's like, you know, I grew up on the War Games. It was always violent. It delivered. And you didn't need the... Like, you didn't need the weapons. Like, for me, I thought the best part of this match was Kota and who was it? Fulton Sawyer?
Yeah,
I thought the opening 5 minutes felt like a War Games, and I thought it was an exciting 5 minutes.
Yeah, and then they ruined it right after the first interval.
Yeah, and then it went, you know, it was fine there. Then we get I personally like having the teams on the floor. It just adds an extra dynamic, seeing them getting, you know, reacting to the action and all this. I always thought that worked better than having to bring them out, but... Nowadays, people like to bring them out for them to get cheered when they come in or get booed or whatever. And the baby faces have the advantage, which is not... That never happens in War Games. It's like, I'm like, what the fuck?
Is Russo booking?
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I was like, huh? But I guess it's because Strickland couldn't work. And they were going to knock him out, and then the heels then would steal the advantage from him. But again... So I guess in a sense that okay, it was all right with that. But I will say they were doing okay. But once Callahan took out Strickland, the whole dynamic changed, and the match then became a total weapons match. And which is funny, you have all these weapons sprinkled out, and they're not using it in the first part. And funny as it was, that's the most exciting part of the match. I believe I called it that Abyss would be taking a thumbtack bump.
Yep.
And yeah, and check. Tommy Dreamer will have plunder with him. Check. I think it's disgusting Tommy Dreamer wearing the polka dots as an homage to a War. I can tell you, Dusty Rhodes would never wear one of the polka dots in a War Games match. That just drove me batty, but that's not the be all end all. Barrington Hughes looked absolutely terrible in his moments here. I kind of liked the finish of Havoc and Callahan getting countering Callahan ends up eating the Acid Rainmaker, and then they end up tapping out the other guy. Oh, Fulton Sawyer, I guess it was. And I liked it with the barbed wire. I thought that was great. But then rolling, wrapping around Barrington Hughes in it to do the slowest running bump into the corner with it, I thought was dumb. There's a lot of dumb moments here. I appreciated that they bled. There were some guys who did bleed and bladed in this match. So I do appreciate that, trying to give it that. But once other weapons become used, especially when Dreamer rolls his shopping cart of shit in. Again, people lost interest in it. I guess they didn't have the top of the cage, so for Kota to do that big high spot, or they just, they didn't have the money to put a cage on, top of a cage on it, I guess. I don't know. But it had a lot of flaws. I really enjoyed the first part. I thought, especially that opening spot with Kota, I thought it was really great. There were some violent moments in there, some violent spots, especially, again, in the opening with Kota taking some big-time bumps into the cage, him grating the face in the cage, taking just some nasty bumps into the cage. That was about as violent there that we have. But by God, there were just so many, bad moments. And then you have like Jimmy Havoc doing a Road Warrior Hawk homage. Who, again, he's the heel, Jimmy Havoc. Road Warrior Hawk was a babyface in the original War Games. So why is he a heel doing an homage, painting up his face like Road Warrior Hawk? That's fucking, again, that's not heelish. That's a babyface thing to do. I mean, I give it like 2 3/4, maybe 3 stars. I mean, there was a good enough action, but God, there was a lot of just superfluous bullshit, overbooking, not understanding the gimmick is the War Games, not all the fucking shit you bring into the War Games. And I think they'd be better served if the promoters would understand War Games. Let's say this out loud: War Games is the gimmick, not all the fucking plunder. What do you think, Tim?
I love this match. 4 stars. No, I thought it was complete fucking horse shit from beginning to end. Really, the opening, I thought you were right, was good. But then also, you can kind of see the bloom is off the rose with sort of Fulton pretty quick. Kota Brazil's kind of movement and kind of he made the opening segment work.
The other thing is I thought Fulton was good as the monster bad guy, right? But he completely shrunk to the background once Callahan got in there,
right.
And his status shrunk considerably, and his importance shrunk in considerably also,
right.
When Dusty and Arn would start the cage, their importance never shrunk during the match, and here we see it. There was definitely a pecking and a hierarchy, and there was always a hierarchy in the War Games back in the day, but they never... it was never so blatant as it was here. As there's like a lot of ego, a lot of blowjob ego doing here. But go on, man.
Yeah, and Fulton threw a really like not great looking clothesline at one point also, and then he took a back bump onto an upside down table that I was like really scared for the guy. So he's not necessarily the most polished worker, but he looked good in the opening, and then it's instantly fucking just done for when John Morrison comes out next and the babyfaces has the advantage. You hit pretty much everything, but there is one big point that really fucking irked me also. That I found very annoying was that the heels take the advantage by knocking out Strickland. Strickland never comes back. I don't understand what the reasoning was behind it. If he really couldn't wrestle, or if it was, you know, because he is on the shit list because of the WWN stuff, as far as I've heard. You know, MLW is not very happy with him about that. So, if whatever it is, but then to turn around and then the fucking babyface team just wins? I'm like, they're losing, yeah. Man. The man never comes back, and then they still just win. It's like, Jesus Christ. It really made all of it just so fucking pointless. You're nicer than me with the 2.75 to 3-star. I couldn't give it that much. I really thought that this match was terrible.
Okay, because I really enjoyed the first part a lot, but it did fall off a cliff for me. Yeah, I am probably being a little generous because I felt everyone worked hard in it. But God, yeah, there's just so much fucking bullshit, and yeah.
There's a lot to hate in this match.
Yeah, and then you know what? Even they booked this thing, and it was like, it felt like the teams were like a big meshing pot of teams. It wasn't even like,
yeah,
you know, like, they're not even like the top baby faces. Yeah. Like to me, the feud that was building towards the War Games match was Team Filthy versus the Stud Stable.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said that last week too. Yeah.
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 This felt like, why are these guys in the War Games? Other than it was finally revealed that Callahan took out Strickland. Well, that's a blood feud between those two, not. Doesn't need to be War Games. They tried.
Right.
The book into where they were, but man, yeah, it was just.
And then the post match. I mean, I felt like the whole heel team had their faces painted, but then you know the post match the heel teams are all fighting with each other, right? So it didn't feel like mishmash team that wasn't really on the same page in any way, and just yeah, it didn't. None of it really seemed to make any sense at all to me, really.
But Kota Brazil is the guy. Honestly, I think his stock has risen the most out of MLW than almost anybody.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he pretty much came out of nowhere almost. I mean, yeah, you can say the Lawler, but he's, I mean, his stock's high everywhere. Kota Brazil, I mean, I thought this was really a standout performance. And again, it's based on his selling. And his personality of people really caring about him. Oh, on that note, unbelievable. We'll head over and we'll look at NXT. And we open up with Donna Purrazzo and Dakota Kai versus Aaliyah and Evans. You know, Donna can really stand out, I feel. Because of her mat wrestling, if they make that her calling card and really push it hard, she can stand out separate from a lot of the girls because of all the, you know, a lot of the tricks she has on the mat. When Donna was working with Evans, I really liked Evans selling the arm. I will say I absolutely love the finish of the smash, the blind tag into the big punch. But again, Dakota Kai was used as an afterthought, and I thought she was getting momentum, and it felt like they pulled the rug out from under her again once she started climbing the ladder. It was like Charlie Brown and the Lucy pulling the football away from him, trying to kick it on Thanksgiving, and that's how it feels like with Dakota Kai. For every step forward she goes, they like feel like you're about to get a push, and they pull the football from her. What do you think of this match, man?
The match I thought was fine. I felt like, and honestly, something similar to this will happen again later, so, and I can't even put it as much on this match as being that bad of it comparatively, but it felt like the selling of the arm from Lacey came a little bit out of nowhere. Just like, I didn't feel like her arm was worked over enough for the amount of selling that she did.
Okay, that's fair.
But it was good, and the selling was good, and then she didn't really stick with it over the top, so I can definitely be fine with it. yeah, I thought it was weird that they were doing the heat on Deano, and then the, you know, the hot tag for Kai lasts like all of like 2 minutes, and then she just gets punched in the face and pinned, and I was just like really shocked by that. I guess I shouldn't have been. I was like, oh, I guess, you know, maybe they're going to, you know, give something to Dakota Kai to make up for how much she's been just jobbed out. And I was wrong. They just basically just completely like fucking murdered her here. It was a weird debut. It was a weird way to do the team. Lacey Evans, I don't know. I'm still not loving her, but she is, maybe could be, like, decent, I think, at some point here. Like, I'm not.
She has the size, so that really works for in her advantage.
Yeah, I wouldn't completely write her off, but the character is tough, and her doing it is, I think, even harder. I think that, God, I was
going to call her Jasmine. I feel like she should be repackaged in a way.
Yeah.
Because physically she's there. If you, like, you know, if you're just doing stand, like, you know, pictures of her standing there, she looks like she could be a top wrestler. She definitely, again, you know, she needs to work on stuff. But yeah, but I don't think the gimmick's doing her any favors either.
Yeah, no, it's really not. But, so yeah, so I thought that, Aaliyah is looking good, and Deonna looked fine for what she did, but it felt like she spent most of the match getting her ass kicked, and then I did very little. This match was just, I don't know, just so interesting. Like, you talked about pulling the rug out from underneath her. It was just, like, a little bit ridiculous doing that again here.
Then we get into the Velveteen Dream promo, or vignette, I guess, and, you know, you look at Velveteen Dream, he just seems like a star. You never see him wearing his gimmick shirt. You know, that's what makes him stand out. It's what made Ric Flair stand out in the 80s, was him wearing suits. And now he wasn't wearing a Ric Flair t-shirt. He wasn't wearing his gimmick shirt. I mean, so Dream stands out like a star because he's doing things different than everyone else. But man, again, they bring in the whodunit into his really good promo, and it kind of sucks the life out of a Dream vignette. What about you, man? What do you think of it?
Yeah. Dream always, you're right, he does come across like a star, but this whodunit thing is just getting too much. I can't do it anymore. I just want it to be over already.
Street Profits, they stereotype them some more, and they're playing street basketball. Just fucking terrible. I hate them, and I hate everything about the Street Profits at this point. What do you think of this, man?
This was less annoying than some of their other stuff, but it wasn't good. And then so because they're already negative in the hole, it didn't help, you know?
Then we get Bianca Belair, and I'm like, wow, she's cutting a really good babyface promo.
Yeah.
Beginning of this. Then she's realizing, oh, wait, I'm the fucking heel in this. And then she comes back and becomes a heel. What a fucking mixed message. And I don't know, man. That's not good. You gotta stick to what you're at. And she's supposed to be the heel in this program. You better fucking be a heel. Don't gray area. This gray area. I guess the worst thing you can be is a gray area character. What you get out of this one, Tim?
One thing that I liked here, though, I'm with you on that it was like two in between. I think maybe I said it with the Nikki Cross thing. It feels like that angle is always to like make somebody serious, and then you can start to like them as a babyface. But the one thing that I did like from the promo, other than kind of that it was like a good babyface promo to start and then a little mixed message, was the finish where after she had gone weeks and weeks of repeating the undefeated, undefeated, undefeated to the point of ad nauseum and just being super annoying, this time she says it once and then goes to say it again, but she's so frustrated and upset that she doesn't even say it again. And I loved that as a payoff for that kind of little storyline or little quirk of her promos lately. It's like she was so upset that she didn't even want to keep saying the thing that she's been saying ridiculously over the top lately. So I kind of liked that as a little wrinkle.
Yeah, that's a good point, Tim. I didn't even pick up on it, but that's really cool.
Yeah, that was like just a little thing that you could pick up on. But other than that, it was like, I get what you're saying, because it feels like she's going babyface, and I don't really understand why they would be turning her babyface, other than to just continuously rub it in our face that they won't turn the Dream babyface. I guess they're just going to turn everyone who should be heel babyface except for him.
Exactly. Then we got this Riker versus Carrillo, Carrillo squash. I don't know about you, man, but I like Carrillo's look. Hector Garza's nephew, I guess. I see high hopes for him, even though he was in the underdog position. I guess not. But that's not what you're supposed to come out looking at a squash. I thought Carrillo did a good job putting Riker over. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I thought that he looked great. I just just speaking about his look, when they shot back to him in the ring after Riker was coming out, he looked like he was a fucking screenshot from a video game. The guy's like, he's got like a weird, just the way that his skin and his facial features are, that he kind of looked like a video game scan. It was weird. But yeah, I thought that his kind of athleticism, the way that he bumped for Riker, the spots and his fire, everything about him. Yeah, he's got something there. I hope that he's, I hope he's signed, because he's a guy that they could definitely get something out of. Hopefully he doesn't just get, you know, job duty like poor Jinzo keeps getting. Like, they actually use this guy, because he definitely could show something. I thought Riker looked good, too, here.
Yeah.
He looked
but
very...
But it's weird when you're, like, your mind, like, I was paying more attention to the jobber, because I was really impressed with the job he was doing. But I'm with you. I like Riker, so...
yeah, I've liked him for a while. What were you going to say? Oh, that was it. I've liked him for a while. I thought he looked good here. He looked aggressive. He looked big, which a lot of guys come into WWE, NXT, whatever, and... from the indies, they were big and strong, but they don't translate to the main roster or even NXT. But he does still here, so I'd like to see what they continue doing with him, if he's able to continue with that kind of dominance.
Yeah, and then we get the Candice LeRae Q&A, and she starts speculating that it's Thomas Ciampa. Ugh. This I thought this segment sucked too. What about you?
Yeah, not really a fan. And then they go into teasing that she can't provide proof that Johnny wasn't there. So yeah.
Yeah, so we're either gonna get one of two reveals that it was Johnny, or somebody black or somehow has evidence that it looks like it's Johnny, but at the stroke of midnight, it's not Johnny. It's the true culprit. Is where I think this is headed. Where do you think it's headed?
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes the most sense with the way things have been going. And it's probably going to... It might be someone out of left field completely that's not even being shown or hasn't even been on TV yet is probably what makes the most sense at this point.
Yep. Keith leaving yet?
Pretty
good. I mean, yeah. I know, first we get the Ricochet Dunn recap. I thought that was well done. What about you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. This was set up really nicely. It just... we'll get into it, I guess.
Yeah. Keith Lee vignette. Again, good. It's just weird him mentioning Dusty, since him and Dusty never worked in NXT together.
Yeah, that is a weird thing. And I still... I don't know why. I was fine with Bask in his glory on the indies, but it feels weird to me that they're letting him say it.
It almost seems heelish, too.
It comes across heelish, and then, like I said, I feel like you're asking for trouble for some Christian group to get upset about it, you know?
Yeah. Ricochet, Pete Dunne. What do you think?
The opening grappling was to my taste, but felt like it went too long.
Yeah.
Felt like Ricochet selling the left hand specifically didn't make any sense, because Pete had been working over his entire body, really. And the hands, both hands, and everything equally, to where it didn't make sense why Ricochet's left hand was the big glaring... That's what I was saying in the first match. It kind of had a similar thing, but here it was even more pronounced, because he then continuously was selling it for the whole match. Like, it was this big deal, and I just didn't see it. I mean, Pete then was kind of going at the arm pretty well, but it just felt like he started selling it like it had been Pete's focus, and it really hadn't. But yeah, the stuff in the beginning, just way too long. Ricochet trying to prove that he can stand on the mat too much. But, like I said, for my taste, great. If this match was a custom match that I had paid for, and they had, you know, they had worked it in someone's basement and sent it to me on DVD, then I would have just eaten it up and loved it. But it felt like for this setting, for the crowd, for what you're trying to get across, it was not necessary. And then for what we ended
up... With that said, the crowd was hot for this match.
The crowd was into it, that's for sure. But then the finish, I mean, having so much investment to then have that finish pisses me off.
You knew it was coming, right?
I felt like it, but then they got me, man. They bought me back in, and I thought they got to do something. They wouldn't put this much out there to then...
And they put that much time in it. I mean, they went 20-plus, didn't they?
Yeah, and it's so annoying to me when you put that much... When you do... I guess I get that their idea is that they're giving you a lot to make up for the non-finish, but to me, I feel like it has the negative effect, personally, is I get more upset that I got invested in this long match for it to have a non-finish. For me, the biggest, best thing in the whole match was the deadlift brainbuster by Ricochet for the counter of the Kimura. Just because the way that Dunn sold it was so perfect. I mean, he hit the ground and was just stiff as a board. And then when he finally starts moving, he goes to reach to check his neck, almost as if he's trying to make sure his neck is still there. Like, he's just so fucked up from this brainbuster. I thought it was beautiful. And then that kind of sets up the shitty finish with the Undisputed Era coming out and just jumping him. So I thought that was a good exclamation point on the match, but it just sucks that it finished the way that it did. The match was very good, but like I said, I think that it was trying really hard to be great and honestly was going a little bit overboard in a lot of ways, where it was maybe a little bit too long and overstaying its welcome in some ways, in an attempt to try to feel like an epic match.
Yeah. It felt like they were doing a self-conscious epic.
Yeah, and, no, that's completely it.
Yeah, and I felt, it felt very NWA 1980s-ish in style, where you actually had a long Dunn Heat segment, comebacks by Ricochet, babyface comebacks. But it felt like Dunn really outclassed Ricochet here in this match, because Dunn dominated Ricochet for the most part of this match. Hot crowd. I liked Dunn using the Matrix early on. First part, I mean, was all Dunn. I mean, it was like all Dunn. We see this big, nasty kick by Dunn. Structured, it was just structured like an NWA title match. Rico makes a little bit of a comeback, but he's selling the arm. And it might have been because I'm with you, Dunn worked over the whole body, but that one kick was nasty to the arm, where it does feel like, it sounded like a shotgun to Ricochet's arm. So I can understand Ricochet selling that. I did like Rico's counters to a lot of the stuff, but I love Dunn just stomping the shit out of Rico's hand. I thought it was a nice little touch. It was there, but it felt like they have a way better match in them, I feel like. This felt like they were trying to have a classic, but they had, okay, we're going to get bullshit finish, but we can still have this classic match. And I think they just reached a little too much, too far than what they were capable of. But I did feel like Dunn outclassed Ricochet a lot in this match. What about you? What's your take on that?
No, I definitely think that that's 100% true. It felt like Dunn...
That might have been the structure they were going for.
Yeah, it felt like Dunn was driving the match in a lot of ways.
Yep.
And it felt like he got the, better-looking offense, better control, looked more polished. When Ricochet finally turned it up and was doing some high-flying type stuff, it seemed like Dunn was able to keep up right with him. And you even had commentary pointing that out. When Pete Dunn started out, he was a high-flyer too. So to say, like, he can do everything Ricochet can do, plus he can, brawl and grapple and everything else. But they also were talking about him being the top face of the NXT UK division, and what does that mean for the title? So I think that in a lot of ways that probably was the structure, because they wanted to to present him really strongly, because he's going to have to be the top guy for a brand coming up very soon.
Yep. Overall, man, I was not impressed with this show. I mean, they're really building to this Ricochet Pete Dunne match. I'm not saying it didn't deliver, but it felt, you knew he gave us exactly what I was expecting on that finish. It felt a lot of stale stuff throughout the show. What about you?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Acts that I don't really care about, like the Street Profits and stuff like that, and then. Lacey Evans ruining what was a pretty good tag team to me. Not ruining, but just her being in that tag team, being like the one person who stood out as someone who I didn't care about, and stuff like that. Just kind of hurts the...
Because the tag match felt like a match to get Lacey Evans over.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, kind of been really feeling like most of her matches are about getting her over at this point. They seem to be staying focused on her at least somewhat. So we'll see where that goes moving forward. But, just not the best episode, especially because that main event, not delivering an actual finish, really did hurt it for me.
Yeah, I understand. When they booked it, I knew they were fucked. And we both knew it, so.
Yeah, but it was like, why even book it? It was like they booked themselves.
I'm with you.
And then, are they going to even come back to it moving forward? It feels like no. It feels like it's just, that's just it.
See, I thought they were teasing to a big match down the road. I wasn't expecting it to happen within, like, a month later type of thing. Right. So, yeah. And then, heck, why don't we move into the main event here of what we watched, which was Warrior Wrestling 2 on High Spots. My God, this is a pretty rough show. It looked like it drew a pretty good crowd, though, but my God, it was a rough, rough show. What about you?
Yeah, I was not a fan of really much of it.
Yeah.
Being perfectly honest, it was a lot to not enjoy for me. Good crowd, it seemed like. They were, I mean, a really good crowd putting up with this, honestly.
Mic'd terribly.
Mic'd poorly. So, yeah, just rough stuff all around. And even the match that I was hoping would save the show delivered in some ways, but then had bullshit finish. Just like I was just talking about with NXT, where it was a similar feeling where it was like I kind of expected it, but it still sucked when it happened, especially the way it happened.
Yep. I mean, with you, agreement, it was like overbooked in a way. I mean, we'll get to it. But the rules just screamed. I went around when they had to read out all the rules to us for that match. I'm like, oh God, this is a mess.
Oh yeah. I wasn't even talking about the main event actually, because I expected that to kind of be clustery because it was so much, but that did even break down even more than I expected it to. So yeah.
All right. First, we get DJ T versus Pat Monix, which we can't talk about because it was joined in progress.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck, right?
Yep. I was already annoyed. Joined in progress. DJ Z looks good. I thought that Monix's hope spots were good. And then I love that we get a fucking flash of the graphic right before the finish. So it's like they completely ruined my ability to really judge this match in any way. It's joined in progress, and you cut out to me right on the finish. So, yeah, I gave it nothing. I couldn't rate it.
Yep, that's where I'm at. Then we get Chelsea Green and Britt Baker versus Mia Yim and Santana Garrett.
I completely skip over Sam Adonis's promo. I respect you for it.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. and he promos and attacks Pat Monix. My bad.
And it's
what were your thoughts on that thing?
I do not care. It kind of felt like the shouty Dolph Ziggler promos that he would do forever, except for with none of the passion.
Yeah, and he's built into a Colt Cabana match. Like,
yeah.
Who cares? Chelsea, yeah, okay, I just named the girls. I thought this was a solid match.
Yeah.
Solid Southern tag worked in a weird way early. The finish, Mia Yim, bring some heel work to the match at least, but the match didn't have any of it up to it. So, you know, when you're doing a Southern tag, you need to have a heel team. If you're doing two babyface teams and doing a Southern tag, it doesn't work as well.
Yeah.
I gave it 2 stars. And, yeah, I mean, it just seemed like they didn't understand what the fuck they should do. And thank God for Mia Yim finally healing it up at one point, because, man, you're a fucking heel in this match. And I'm finally glad that they realized it. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't make sense for her team to be the heels, though, because Santana Garrett is, you know, a natural babyface. I mean, realistically, the teams were fucked. It probably should have been Baker and Garrett versus Yim and Green, and then you could have had clear heels and babyfaces.
Yeah.
The match, I mean, was fine. The only stuff that really stood out was Mia Yim's strikes, and her control segments looked good. And you talked about it, her doing some heel work. That was the only time where the match felt serious and, like, really got into anything. Yeah, I gave it 2.25, so I'm with you. You know, it was fine.
Yeah, and then we got Jay Bradley versus Darby Allin. What do you think of that one, man?
I was interested to see what Darby could do, as I've, you know, recently turned the corner on him as a super worker of 2018. And he did a good job. He sold his ass off here. Does some crazy stunts, bumps big, you know, has great fire, fights back. And he just, you know, I was, like, impressed, because Bradley is not a guy that I've ever liked. He's really, at this point now, with what he's doing too, he comes across like a knockoff of Joe Doering, which is already a knockoff of a knockoff of a knockoff. So he's like a, you know, a third generation Xerox copy. I mean, the videotape is just completely degradating at this point. But, you know, Darby was able to make the match at least somewhat interesting. Steals the win. I like the way he did it. Hobbles off. Still, 2.5 stars. Nothing that I'm going to tell people that they need to watch, you know. But Darby was able to bring some interestingness to the match with a guy who I usually can't stand watching.
I give this 3 stars. I liked Bradley catching Allen on the dive and destroying his back. I like Bradley using his size in this match. Allen with the low-level dropkick makes perfect sense. Big-time tope by Darby. Crowd but it was a fun match overall. Yeah, no, I mean, we didn't go too long, but it worked for me. Then we got David Arquette, Team Arquette, versus
Frank the Clown and James Ellsworth.
Ellsworth, man, what do you think of this?
This was garbage. This was just a mess to me. You got probably the only guys on the show who could get real heat with Frank the Clown and James Ellsworth, and you throw them into what's like essentially like a comic relief match. But to my mind, it's like you really shouldn't be doing a comic relief match until you've actually had some good serious wrestling. And we're not really to the point where I need any comic relief. So it just pisses me off that you're wasting basically the only guys who can get heat in a comedy match that's then not worked as a fucking comedy match, really. They like kind of try to work mostly serious, so it's just a waste of everything. This match was just fucking annoying. I gave it a dud.
Well, that's 2 of us. I gave it a dud also. Yeah, it's like, what the fuck? Honestly, it felt like all these guys could be a heel group together. And why they're working each other, obviously, I think Ellsworth and Arquette naturally sound like it'd be interesting. But if Ellsworth is working the heel shtick and doing his last WWE gimmick, yeah, he can't. It won't work, that dynamic. Terrible match. Then we got Jordynne Grace versus Tessa Blanchard. You know, I thought this was a good, solid match. I gave it 2.5 stars. Tessa is a better worker as a heel than she is a babyface. Jordynne Grace could be the best unsigned female in wrestling right now. Grace using her size here, enjoying Jordan's double clothesline. Not digging Tessa popping up off the slams and stuff. And I felt a little over the top. They were trying to work this All Japan Women's Classic psychology match, but that's not who they are. But I still enjoyed what I saw for the most part. Even with the hickey marks. What'd you make of the match?
Yeah, I would say this is probably, to me, like the two best American women's wrestlers that there is right now. So I was super excited. This is the one that I said I thought could save the show, and then had a fuck finish, which was good. And I actually, not good, but the post-match was good in that it made me feel like excited for a heated brawl and for this match to keep going or for them to go at it again. But I also am like, they're not going to pay this off here, though. Like, this company's not going to pay off this feud between these two and do anything more. So it just kind of, even though the angle I felt was good with the pull apart, it just, I don't expect it to go anywhere. So it's kind of annoying in that regard. Yeah, I liked the opening action. I loved the chain wrestling to start. I thought that they did really well. Felt like they're working hard, really, you know, really trying to, it felt like a real struggle. So I liked that a lot. Jordynne shows off that she's more powerful, but Tessa's not going to let herself get bullied around. I thought that was great. She stands up for herself. And then when Jordynne tries to kind of show off that she's nimble and athletic and agile, Tessa's like, fuck that. She's not going to give up power and agility. So she starts showing off her speed. But I get what you're saying. There is some over the topness, especially I think that the facials from Tessa off of the kick out on the top rope code breaker I thought was really kind of ridiculous. And that kind of spot is really just fucking overdone to the hilt to me in general. It's a real Shawn Michaels kind of feel. It feels like a WWE thing to kind of, oh my God, what's it going to take to keep this guy down face that everyone feels the need to put into their matches now when they want to make it feel like a big deal. So that was kind of annoying. But yeah, I felt like they did a good job of making it feel legit that they were breaking down into a fight, and then she slaps the ref. But yeah, like I said, that sucked for me for a finish for this, because I was excited for this matchup. And it felt like, yeah, like I knew that this is where it's going to go, because I didn't expect Tessa to lose, and I also didn't expect Tessa to win the Black Label Pro title. So I knew there was going to be some kind of bullshit finish here. Just kind of wish that they had gone for almost anything else, because just slapping the referee for a DQ feels just kind of weak. I gave it 2¾ stars for the match. And so, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I gave it 2.5 stars also. What'd you think of the next match? Six-man tag.
I mean, I don't even know. My notes just say, did this match happen? It felt like it went by really quick. There was just a lot of spots. Felt like filler match on the show, really, just to get a bunch of guys in here. And I don't know why you're doing a big multi-man tag when you already have this crazy main event on this show. Just seems like pointless to me. No one really stood out. I did not get into this at all. I don't really have anything to say about it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I give it 2.5. I had some big moves. I didn't like El Gringo Loco being referred to as the Ace of Base. It was big moves. That Frankenstein on the floor was nuts and not safe looking at all. But yeah, 2.5. Then we got Sam Adonis versus Colt Cabana. I go, imagine it was a wrestling match, kind of morphed into a little bit of a comedy. It didn't do anything for me, so I stayed. So I'm going to go star and 3/4. What about you? Where did you go?
This wasn't really bad, but it was way too fucking long. I gave it 1 star.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I guess we're going to rate the main event as one match. But I will say it had, it's a 10-man tag. It's a 10-man tag, and then the winning team, it's an 8-man tag, I'm sorry. And then the winning team, they pick their partner, and then the winning team then becomes a singles match between the final two. I'll say I liked the first half of the match, where it was the 8-on-8, 4-on-4. A lot of Austin Aries stood out. But then after that, there wasn't a lot of sharing or how to get to where we're going or what the plan was. I enjoyed the opening spot fest opening, but it fell far. You're supposed to climax at your finish, but your finish was the climax in the first fall. Everything else was being built up to, and it felt kind of flat for me. What about you? What do you think of it, Tim?
Too much going on. I wish that they had gotten into it, because this show had already kind of, I mean, if you skip to the super long intermission where they're playing Jack Swagger versus Alberto Del Rio from the first show, I guess, during the intermission, the show really felt like it breezed by kind of quick. And then the entrances on this, and then giving everyone their own announcement, and it just took so fucking long.
Yeah, we had an hour left in the show.
Yeah,
and it took like 25 minutes on entrances for the opening segment.
Yeah, and so to me, it's just like, then after all that, you go into Aries gets the mic, and then they play around with everyone tagging in and out because they don't want to wrestle Aries, or they do want to wrestle Aries, or whatever the fuck it is. And it's like, just get to some action. And then once it did get going, it was good. And Aries did, you're right, Aries stood out, especially being the guy who was able to mix it up with everyone from Cage to Ray and everyone and look good. So, that said, the opening 8-man was good. And then the rest just felt like it was tacked on, honestly. The next two matches felt rushed through. I felt like it was weird that you had the Lucha Brothers, but they're not on the same team. That was like a weird move to split that up. But I talked about it when we first were talking about reviewing the show. It sounded like that they did this booking actually probably the smartest way you could, with who won and what teams and all that move forward. Even down to the final, I thought was smart, but then in practice it just was rushed. It was, like you said, fell flat, didn't really feel important. When Cage wins, it really feels like just an afterthought after all the other stuff that had already happened before that. So it really, I mean, yeah, they did a really bad job of building to the winner. It really felt like nothing mattered after the opening eight-man.
I'm with you completely. And, yeah, and overall, I thought this overall, I'd have to give it a thumbs-down show. I mean, nothing really stood out for me. What about you?
Yeah, nothing on this stood out at all, except for that it's a lot of really bad booking.
Yeah.
Not a Agreed. Good
show. All right, man, Tim, anything you want to plug on our way out?
No. I guess I don't know if I plugged the Deathmatch Nick Gage Invitational before, but go check that out on PTBN. Go to the Pro Wrestling Only, the new site. It's really looking cool. I think we just got messaged that we have our own podcast page on the site, so go check that out. I think it's like weekly podcast. Otherwise, just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Follow me on Twitter at Titans of Wrestling, and follow me on WorldCast Wednesdays. Remember, we're part of the Pro Wrestling Only feed now, and that's where we're at. We're having fun, and check out some wrestling this week, and we'll catch you later. I feel wasted. Get her off my mind when I'm wasted. I waste all my time when I'm wasted. GTA love, bitches wasted. I'm on these drugs, I feel wasted. Get her off my mind when I'm wasted. I waste all my time when I'm wasted. She do cocaine in my basement. I'm a doctor, but I'm running out of patience. She told me that she's trying to get closer. So demonic, she Medusa with a little Pocahontas. She been lacing on my drugs or something. Cause every time that we together, I'm unconscious. Hold up, let me be honest. I know I saw her put the perks in my crown.